Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Two Premier League sides are in the semi-finals of the Champions League. Liverpool getting through a lively second leg against Benfica. Whilst it was chaos for Manchester City in Madrid, it was scrappy, it was fiery, and a 0-0 draw was enough. But they'll be back in the Spanish capital soon. Villarreal for Liverpool in the semis, Real Madrid for City. Can West Ham and Leicester add to the English progression in Europe tonight? Both teams on their travels, the Hammers with one of their biggest games in years this evening when they play Lyon, whilst Leicester travel to PSV Eindhoven with both ties finally poised. And it's that time of the season again where the transfer rumour mill begins to fire up once more. Newcastle United, Arsenal and Tottenham are all in the papers today. Welcome along to Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League show from Sports Social. My name's Niall, and whenever the show's got a European flavour, which seems to be quite regularly these days, it has to be Sports Social's Mr. Culture, Joel Tudor, on the podcast. Morning, Joel.
I don't know if that name will stick, but it's always the case, isn't it? It's like rubbing it in my face all the time, every time teams are in Europe, and I'm just sat here like... Yeah, I've just been set to deal with it. Nice.
He's a well-travelled guy, is our Joel, a well-travelled man. And Marley Anderson is here as well, who pre-podcast has been moaning about the neighbours in East Manchester. adult life, eh, Marley? Adult life.
Yeah, I mean, tell me I'm old, or without telling me I'm actually old. So that is, it's one of them adult problems, but that's about as exciting as my life is right now. We're not all fighting in, pulling hair and fighting like Stefan Savic was last night, but hasn't quite got to that stage yet.
Me and Joel were quite interested in the story, so even though it sounds a little bit Emmerdale, it was actually quite interesting. It sounds like one of those things you'd see on a community Facebook page with people complaining.
Oh, they are gold.
They're absolutely brilliant, aren't they? Well, there was a little bit of handbags last night, as Marley rightly points out, at the Wanda Metropolitano, Atletico Madrid versus Manchester City, the second leg of the Champions League quarterfinal between those two sides. Kevin De Bruyne scored a goal in the reverse fixture at the Etihad a week prior to last night's game, which means that City went into the game 1-0 up on aggregate. And that's how it stayed. 0-0 at full time. It was a horrible, attritional game, exactly as we thought it would be, Marley. No real surprises in terms of the way things played out. But despite the fact there were no goals, it was still a pretty entertaining watch, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think in a weird way, the 0-0 in Madrid was probably the more exciting game than Liverpool 3, Benfica 3 on the other channel. Just because... You knew that, well, one, the tie was more in the balance because Atletico at any point only needed one goal to extend it out to extra time and stuff. But obviously more for the, Niall, you're going to need the bleep button quite a lot on this podcast because
okay, I'm standing by.
I can't stop saying shithousery because that's ultimately what it was. It was 90 minutes of it. Like, they targeted... the players they thought they could target. I think they probably hoped Jack Grealish would start, and I think the reason he didn't start was because of what happened in the 10 minutes that he came on in the last leg, and instantly was targeted by Vasalico and Savic and a couple of others. But this time they picked Foden, and it's total shithousery, not just because it's cheating to try and win. It's also pretty low in terms of you're picking Foden because he's the youngest and he's also physically the smallest, so you can really hurt him if you target him. And you know, straight away it happened with Felipe smashing through the back of him, and that set the tone for the game. I think the referee lost the game there when he came through Foden, and he didn't give Felipe a yellow card, even though Foden had to have a bandage around his head because he was physically bleeding from his head. So I don't know how you can't see that as a foul, you know, as a sort of serious infringement. But that set the tone, and you know, it got worse towards the end, as we'll probably come on to soon. But the one that set me off was it was just a random thing at the end of the, I think it was right at the end of the first half when the ball was going out of play and Foden was chasing it and Savic was chasing it, but Foden was about 5 yards ahead and none of them, the ball was about 10 yards ahead of the pair of them, so the ball ran off the pitch and Foden was about to step to go and pick the ball up, and Savic like diverted his run and just shouldered him in the back. And at that point, I mean, I'd have lost my temper if I was Foden, but he sort of kept it cool and kept it calm, and he actually did really well, Foden. He was really mature in the whole situation for the whole game. But yes, it's disappointing that such an expensive squad like Atletico and such a talented squad has to play like that, because everybody tuning in to the TV and to watch that, everyone knew how the game was going to go. Like, everybody knew that there was going to be a fight. Everybody had on the betting slips like over 5 yellow cards because it's absolutely nailed on. And even if there's 1 yellow card after 80 minutes, you know there's going to be 4 or 5 in the last 10 when Atletico can't get the ball and, you know, are getting countered. They're going to chop someone and a fight's going to start. And it was disappointing that it always has to come to that, because they're a talented squad. They've got talent there. They just don't use it. They choose to go the other way. And it doesn't really work against the best teams in the world, as it proved last night.
It all booted off at the end, and that spilled over into the tunnel. There were reports claiming that the police were called to deal with the scuffles in the tunnel after the game. Things were being thrown. Players were threatening each other. There was a lot of boisterous behaviour going on in the tunnel. And especially in the final few minutes, the commentary team, after Phil Foden was kind of wiped out by Felipe, who eventually got sent off, and understandably so for the way he kind of kicked out at Phil Foden. That was before Savic came bowling over and got involved as well. But the commentary team said, these are the scenes we don't want to see. And it sparked quite a big debate on social media, actually. There were a lot of people on Twitter, Joel, that were like, actually, a fair few of us do like to see the drama. We do like to see the scrapping and the handbags. What camp do you fall in? Are you one of these people who think that it's not necessary? Or do you quite enjoy the drama and entertainment of two sides kind of getting up in each other's faces and there being a bit of handbags?
Yeah, I think it's a good part. I'm not saying that it's good to start kicking shells out of each other, but I mean in terms of the fact that I feel like football these days has become a little bit too robotic, and I think it just shows the human side of football, which I think everyone loves, which is the passion. Atletico Madrid players will probably die on the pitch before they actually have to go off the pitch, and that's what I love about the game. It's just the fact that both teams are so committed to getting to that next stage, and they'll do everything. You know, when you saw Foden rolling onto the pitch, that's exactly what Atletico Madrid players do in most games when they're trying to seal out a tie. And it was just the fact that they didn't like it happening to them. I saw it as a taste of their own medicine, if I'm honest, and they just didn't like that fact. And to be honest, I thought that the Manchester City players, taking all my bias rivalry aside, I thought they handled themselves ridiculously well in that situation, like Marley said, because let's not forget, Atletico at that stage were on the way out. I think they probably accepted it at that stage, and then they were probably riling up City players, and if City players reacted, they would have been out of a semi-final against Real Madrid. They've got a lot of injury problems to deal with in the next weeks, so it would have been just disaster for them. So considering the age of a lot of the players, like Foden, who, you know, I'm sure if any other 21-year-old player was getting dragged off the floor when you're injured, I'm sure many of them would step up and react to that, because it's ridiculous what Savage did. But I just think this is what football is. It's passion, it's heated, it's instinctive on the pitch. And I'm sorry, but the punditry team try and come off as if they're saints. I don't know if that's because the producers in the race making sure that everything's very neutral and they don't want to condone any of that kind of violence, quote unquote. But I'm sorry, but it's part and parcel of football. It's going to happen on the pitch.
It's interesting, Joel, because there's a fine line, I guess, between what we jokingly refer to as housery and cheating. There's professional advantage, and then there's generally trying to hurt someone. And that is what I saw from Felipe. And I was stunned that he couldn't really understand why he was sent off.
Because he's an absolute diff,
he should have been sent off for
totally brain dead. Absolute.
Yeah, I mean, but I just don't get it. I mean, did he genuinely think he was innocent there? I mean, should have been a straight red, let alone a second yellow.
It was baffling. And again, that goes back to the referee as well. It's the fact that it feels like for me in Europe, the referees just do not take control of games the way they should do, in comparison to maybe in a tournament where they're a little bit more stricter or set the tone early on. If there's a foul early on, start the tone and say, okay, yellow card. And then the players will then know, okay, this referee is a little bit more stricter when it comes to fouls. The fact that he lets so many things go, I think the Atletico Madrid players thought they could get away with murder towards the end, and literally it carried on in the tunnel. There should be retrospective action for a lot of what happened there, but I doubt there will be. And for me,
do you think people will have lost respect for Atletico after that last night, Joel?
Well, this is the club they've always been, though. If you've watched them the last 10 years under Simeone, they have an amazing side, which is that their craft is unbelievably amazing defensive displays. Like, one of the best teams I've ever seen in that regard. And that's why Simeone is so highly regarded. But when things don't go their way, they are just... it's like a toddler not getting their way. They start, we've seen it in so many games, especially against Real Madrid in the Champions League, where it boils over because they know they're not getting their way anymore. And yet, for example, when they were at Old Trafford 3 weeks ago, the ball was in play 11 minutes out of the last 30 minutes. And the reason for that was that Atletico Madrid were theatrical, trying to convince the referee with injuries. They put the ball out of play, kick the ball around. You know, this is what City were doing towards the end. It's what you have to do to grind out a result. They were under the cosh for the last 30 minutes. It was like the teams had switched sides in a way. And for me, you know, this is why I give great credit to City, because I think they showed a different side to their capabilities. Because a Guardiola side is not typically one which is having to low block, having to defend for their lives under a constant amount of pressure, having to deal with teams that are trying to cause a reaction, spark a reaction. And I thought they just settled it very, very well, despite the fact that Atletico were just massively antagonising.
I agree. I think defensively, City were given a real test and they came through it exceptionally well. I thought Nathan Ake looked good, considering there were question marks over his arrival from Bournemouth a couple of seasons ago. He's really starting to look like someone who can comfortably deputise for Stones, Laporte or Diaz, whoever it may be that doesn't play. I thought he was actually very good last night. But to get through in these sorts of games, Marley, you do need a bit of luck. We can talk about Atletico Madrid and the way that they were unsavoury the whole night. But should they have had a penalty during the game? There was a ropey challenge from Joao Cancelo that looked like it could well have been given as a spot kick. What did you make of it?
To be honest, no, because they didn't deserve it. if you're going to play like that, any 50-50 decisions, you don't deserve them. I don't know. To be fair, it was a decent shout. I didn't think that much got made of it. Probably did in the Wanda, like in the crowd. But yeah, it's the more you look at it, the more you think, oof, they got away with that one. Because I think it's like one of them scruffy things where everyone's genuinely going for the ball, and you know it's sort of squirming around. And it's hard to even see whether Cancelo got a slight toe on the ball as it sort of squirts away from the box, because it happens so quick. I think he does, to be fair, and that's probably what saves him. But yeah, there's definitely contact after that happens. And the thing with football now is like half the time you get punished for what happens after the initial contact, which is ridiculous, really. But you know, it's not a surprise if that was given. But I think he does just about get a stud or a toe on the ball, and that's probably what saves him. So, yeah, but it would have been gutting if that was there for Atletico and they got two extra time or even got a result off the back of that, because, you know, the way they played and the one of the five attacks he had in the entire two legs, if that ended up in a penalty and them scoring it, and, you know, that would have been quite a sickener.
Yeah, I mean, you can call it lucky, like some people have done, but you do need that luck, like I mentioned before. You need that rub of the green in order to get through these sorts of games. Guardiola said after the match, Marley, that, you know, he's proud of his side. It's only the third ever time that City have reached the Champions League semi-finals, all three of which have been under his stewardship as manager of the club. But he also said that he's going to caveat the celebrations with the fact that his side are in big trouble. Those are his words, big trouble with injuries. Obviously, there's an FA Cup semi-final coming up at the weekend, which we'll talk about on the Dugout Show, which will be out on Friday night here on Football Social Daily. But, you know, with this stage of the season ramping up in importance with some big league games and obviously the Champions League semis to come and this FA Cup semi-final at the weekend, do you think that could have implications on their challenge for silverware, those injuries that he mentions, or is he maybe just reacting to the moment?
Quite possibly, especially when you consider that they've got Liverpool in the semi at the weekend. It's, you know, it's not a something that you want to go into a game where you're not quite full strength. But yeah, we'll have to see how bad they are. I think there was one to De Bruyne, wasn't there? Which would be a big loss, because the way he played in the league game against Liverpool last weekend was incredible. And obviously he's the one that makes City tick. He's the one that's got that extra bit of quality, I think, with when it comes down to the biggest games. So we'll have to just wait and see what the true thing is, because Pep does like to sort of play the moan card a little bit and do that sometimes. He has been known to do that, so, and make a bit extra of things. But yeah, we'll just have to wait and see, I suppose. But City should still be strong enough to get a result, no matter what happens, because they are that good.
Well, Liverpool are also through to the semi-finals of the Champions League, and Liverpool will be City's opponents in that FA Cup semi-final on Sunday. It's really getting down to crunch time of the season. They managed to get through their quarter-final in the Champions League last night. We'll talk about that and some of the other Premier League teams in European action next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to the show. This is Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League podcast from Sport Social. And it was Premier League teams in European action last night. Liverpool and Manchester City. We've spoken about City. What about Liverpool? It was a 3-3 draw against Benfica at Anfield. Liverpool go through, though, on aggregate. They'll face Villarreal in the semi-finals, who surprisingly dumped out Bayern Munich, the Spanish side, massively overachieving with former Arsenal manager Unai Emery as their boss. Too good Firmino finishes, Joel, for Liverpool last night. Can you see him staying at Liverpool too much longer?
Well, he's definitely made a good case for himself yesterday. He was probably one of the best players on the pitch, to be honest. And every time he seems to go out of the side, I've said it myself, that I thought that he would be the first one out in terms of that typical front three that we've seen for the last 4 years. But yeah, he scored two really, really well-taken goals yesterday. But it wasn't an easy tie for Liverpool at all. And obviously the fact that Van Dijk wasn't there as well, I think was such a massive miss. You could see it in the defence quite clearly, considering they conceded three goals. But yeah, with Liverpool, obviously it was a much weakened side. It felt like the game was done prior to it, actually. And you have to give credit to Benfica because they really persevered, especially, you know, a lot of their players, especially Darwin Nunes. His goal was, it reminded me of a young Fernando Torres, the way he just kind of guided it in that bottom corner. But Liverpool were just constantly trying to play the offside trap, and it was just not working out at all. And shout out to Martin Keown, who kept getting every offside wrong despite having about 20 different freeze plays right in front of him. My God, I couldn't believe how many times he was like, that's offside, and then the goal would be given. So shout out to him. But yeah, it was a game where... Yeah, a weakened side against the Benfica side who had nothing to lose. They made a good account for themselves, but it's a good run for Liverpool. They've had Inter Milan, which was a close tie in the second half, and in the second half of that second leg, and then obviously this game against Benfica, and then Villarreal, which is probably going to be the toughest test. But
they've had good draws though, Joel, haven't they? They would have wanted Villarreal.
Yeah, this is the most ideal one. It just reminds me of when Manchester United drew Schalke in the 2011 Champions League campaign. It's similar to that, where even though they've had a good, and let's not get it twisted as well, Villarreal have had to get through some tough teams. They defeated Juventus in the quarterfinals. Defeated Juventus in the last 16. Now they defeated Bayern Munich in the quarterfinals. That's not an easy run at all. It's kind of like Ajax's run when they went to the semifinals. But of course, Liverpool's the most difficult one out of all of those teams. And if I'm honest, I'd be probably more nervous to be playing Villarreal just because Bayern right now, yeah, they've got nothing to do in the La Liga at the moment. I think they're about 8 points off getting into even the Europa League places. So this is all or nothing for them. Whereas Bayern still have one eye on the Bundesliga. They just don't look anywhere near the team that they were like under Jupp Heynckes and Guardiola. It's just a totally different side, and they deserved it completely, Villarreal. But it's going to be a very tough test for Liverpool just because we know how Unai Emery is in Europe, and considering how well they did last year in the Europa League, this is just going to be another chance for them to make history from such a small town as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's only a town of 50,000 people, so they've done really well for themselves. They won the Europa League last season, of course, Villarreal, managed by Unai Emery. I'm sure many people will be looking at his achievements and thinking, why was he not given more time at Arsenal? That's another question. But Liverpool, Villarreal, and Manchester City, Real Madrid are the two semi-finals. Darwin Nunez scored for Benfica last night, had a chance to impress an English audience. Just before we move on here, Marley, do you think we'll see the Uruguayan in the Premier League soon? Because there's plenty of interest that is being talked up in the papers today.
I hope so. He looks a quality player. I've seen after the first leg, a lot of people on social media, I don't know if they're doing it sort of tongue-in-cheek, but saying he was going to like flop if he ever came to the Premier League and stuff. And I can't see that. I think he's one of the best young strikers out there. I think he'd be perfect actually for Dortmund if they sold Haaland. Just slot Nunes into that next position, and you know for a fact that if he does well, he'll go for 150 million in 2 or 3 years' time. So I think he's. I don't know which. The only thing is, I don't know which Premier League club would take him. I don't know if Chelsea want to spend that money again. Having blown it with Werner and Lukaku recently, and Pulisic and Havertz, you know, all big fees. I don't know if they'll do that again. Arsenal have the money, but are they? Well, they might have the money, but they need the striker. But have they got enough pulling power to go and get him? I'm not sure. But yeah, he looks a quality player. He took even his offside goal where he chipped Alisson. You know, he made Alisson look like a five-a-side goalie the way he just flicked that in over the top of him. That was brilliant. So his movement and everything, he's got the lot. He just needs to step up now, I think, in terms of league competition. And obviously the Premier League's the best league in the world. But I can probably see him going to a Germany or a Spain first, to be honest.
He's being talked up with a move to Manchester United as well in the papers. We'll come on to the latest transfer gossip shortly here on Football Social
Daily.
Too
early to ruin his career.
Well, talking of careers might be made tonight. Legends might be made if you're a West Ham supporter, because your team are away from home. The second leg of the Europa League knockout stages, a game against Lyon in France. It's 1-1 on aggregate. David Moyes, in his press conference, said this game could be super close. Leicester are also in European action. We'll come on to them shortly. But first, the Hammers, a chance for them to make history, as I say. No Zouma, no Cresswell. They are depleted. Do you think they'll do it, Joel, tonight against Lyon?
I'm not sure they'll win. But Lyon are in a decent amount of form. They've only lost one in the last five, but they're in 10th place in the French league, which is a massive fall off from what they're usually at. They're usually competing for the European places, so it's the best time to play them. And like we've mentioned so many times on the podcast, it's just the fact that this is West Ham's chance now to just stake a claim. It's similar to the way in which we've said about Villarreal. This is West Ham's pretty much only objective of the season now. Of course, they're in sixth place. There is the off chance they could potentially jump into that top four places, but realistically, this is what the fans have been focusing on for the last, 3 months, pretty much ever since the knockout phases began. And it's the perfect opportunity. I think it's a good team to play as well, just because Lyon aren't as strong as they used to be. They've still got some really talented players, obviously bringing back Ndombele. He's been amazing for them there this season. And then they've got the other Dembele as the striker. It's a strong side, but I think West Ham definitely do have the capabilities to go through in this one. The incentive's there, though, isn't it? To be able to play at the Nou Camp after and then potentially go to a European final. I don't think there's any bigger incentive to actually just manage this tie. And I think Moyes needs to manage the emotional side of this tie more than the actual play, because I think when you get a team like West Ham going to a stage like this in a European competition, it's just unknown territory. And if they let emotions get the better of them, and if they freeze on the big stage, Lyon could end up picking them apart pretty quickly. So we'll see how well his management is in this one, because it's definitely a different test to anything they've had before. But I think that Sevilla game was probably the hardest test they'll have in this competition. So if they go off that game, I mean, I'm sure they'll be fine.
You mentioned freezing on the big stage. I'm not sure there's too much coaching that David Moyes can do in that regard. I suppose it's just up to the players once they step over the white line. If his side just decide they aren't going to turn up, there's not too much tactical analysis that can be done on that. And there's no doubting, Marley, that this will be one of, if not the most pressurised West Ham game for a number of years. They aren't used to the European stage. They aren't used to these pressurised knockout games. Even in cup competitions, we haven't seen them really get to these later stages of things like the FA Cup and the League Cup. So is there a chance that that could play a part tonight?
Yeah, there is. I think going away, away from home to a really sort of partisan crowd, and you know, the very good atmosphere in at Lyon Stadium, it's usually pretty raucous for a competition where they think they can win this. You know, they want that tie against Barcelona in the next round, if that's what happens, just as much as West Ham do, really. And they need it. They arguably need it just as much, if not more, than West Ham, because of what Joel said. They're 10th in Ligue 1, and they're not looking as though they're going to qualify for Europe through their league position next season. So they probably do want to, have a proper crack at this tournament, and they will do as well, because they were all right in the first leg. They weren't the best team. I think West Ham probably edged it. But with the sending off, they got a lifeline and they got back into it. But having said that, like, West Ham have now got less to deal with. I mean, Cresswell and Zouma are big players for West Ham, and I do worry about whether they'll have enough without them, and whether they'll have enough to go and score a couple of goals, because you can see Lyon scoring at least one. So you're gonna probably realistically say West Ham are going to have to score two. And with Antonio on a bit of a dry spell, I'm not sure whether this is just one step too far for them. But I'd love to see them get through to the semis and play Barcelona. It'd be absolutely peak Europa League if that happened. I'm not
Barcelona
sure.
Barcelona or Frankfurt, Marley.
Or Frankfurt, who were actually could still brilliant be them in the first leg. Frankfurt, they scored an absolutely ridiculous goal. And Barcelona's Equalizer was just as ridiculous, to be fair, but from a different angle, different perspective. It would be ultimate West Ham to be like to get through, wouldn't it? And then it to be Frankfurt rather than Barcelona when 500 Hammers have already booked accommodation in Barcelona for that weekend.
Well, we'll see how they get on tonight. They're away from home in Lyon, pressurized second leg in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. As for Leicester City, they're in the third tier of European competition, and it's their quarterfinal against PSV we'll focus on now in the UEFA Europa Conference League. We got there in the end. 0-0 the score currently on aggregate, so it's all to play for in Eindhoven. Leicester have lacked cutting edge at times, not just in Europe this season, but also in the Premier League. Do you think they'll still be favourites here, Joel, despite the second leg being away from home and the pressure beginning to build?
Yeah, you would think so, and this is probably the silver lining of their season if they can do it, just because it's been a pretty lackluster season for them, considering the last two seasons they've been going for the top four, and now they're kind of just languishing around ninth place, which, I mean, after seven years of progress, you have to say it's good that the fact that we're saying Leicester disappointing season, because previously they were just the team that was just going up and down or languishing in the championship. So it's testament of how well they progressed as a club, but they're going to want more than the Conference League. But I guess this is the best entrance into the Europa League, but it's another way to just earn a trophy. I know everyone keeps taking the mick out of this competition, like, well, it is a third tier European trophy, which is not really one that any top club wants to go for, but it's a trophy at the end of the day, and I'm sure, I don't know where the final's being held, but I guess it'll still be a really good experience.
In Albania, Joel. Tirana, Albania.
I thought you were going to say like Monaco or something, but Albania. I mean, yeah, it'd be a nice trip to Albania probably. But yeah, it's a European tie, it's a European final. All these fans, they may never get the opportunity again to go to such an event like this, regardless of how big the competition is. You know, at least it's not the Audi Cup.
So, well, it's only Leicester's second ever European quarterfinal, so I think that tells you a lot about a club who are still growing. And I know they won the Premier League, but that was like it's a 5,000-1 chance, as we all famously know the odds of Leicester winning the league before that season. And winning that title did elevate them, it propelled them, and they kind of grew in stature and standing, gained lots of supporters around the world. They've got an excellent owner who runs the club really, really well. And I think that they are still quite new to all of this European action, and I think Brendan Rodgers is quite keen to point that out in press conferences as well. You know, Leicester City are not a team who even 8 or 9 years ago you'd even consider to be anywhere near the top places in the Premier League, let alone talking about them getting to a European semi-final. So I think that is definitely worth bearing in mind. That being said, I don't think there are many direct flights from East Midlands Airport to Tirana, Albania, but you never know. Just on that, have you changed your mind about the Conference League, Marley, and its importance or its benefits? Has it won you over at all, or are you still in the same position you were?
I'm not really sure, to be honest, because I don't really know, because it's like it does sound stupid, and it probably is stupid that it literally doesn't need to exist. But the quality of sides in it that drop out of the Europa League will always make how it's remembered. Like, so if you get some top quality sides, like look at the Europa League, Barcelona are in it this year, and that makes it a watchable competition. You want to tune into Barcelona on a Thursday night, especially if they play West Ham in the next round. But it's a similar theme with the Europa Conference League. Like PSV versus Leicester could be a Europa League semi-final or quarter-final. Like there's plenty in there.
Marseille are in, Roma are still in.
Yeah, there's some big clubs left in it, so it gives them a chance to win it. I mean, it was kind of ironic that initially it's set up to give the other teams of Europe like a more realistic chance of getting somewhere. You're talking like the likes of, Shakhtar or, you know, Bode Glimt, for example, and they're the only ones that are taking it so far, and go to Rome tonight looking to pull off the biggest win in their history. So yeah, I don't know really. I think once things get started, you kind of get used to them, and I want to see Leicester play PSV. I think it'd be a good game of football, And it's good. There's enough of a carrot at the end of it for both teams to want to go and win it, because PSV and Leicester will both be thinking, we can win this competition and we can get into, you know, at least the Europa League next season. PSV will be there anyway because of the league position. But Leicester, for example, will be like, this is a route to the Europa League. And everyone can snort and laugh at it, including their own manager at one point. But if it gets you what you want at the end of the season, which is European football in the second tier, which is the Europa League, then, you know, who's laughing then? It's everyone else can point the fingers all they like, but if Leicester are in the Europa League next season, they won't give a toss.
I don't think it's been as bad as people thought it would be, actually. I think it's been quite entertaining in parts, although it's hard to keep up with all of the different games. I think it was hard enough to keep up with 32 teams in the Europa League knockout stages, let alone the Europa Conference. So you've got 64 teams to kind of cast your eyes over, particularly from our perspective as well. But Leicester are the only English side in the competition. Could Arsenal, Tottenham, Manchester United, could any of those teams be in the Europa Conference League next season? It's still a possibility, and those sides are in the news when it comes to the transfer talk. Newcastle United also, Marley, maybe you might be in Europe soon. Who knows? We'll talk about those latest transfer rumours next on Football Social Daily.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. Final part of today's show. I'm Niall. I've got Joel Tudor and Marley Anderson alongside me. Marley's a Newcastle fan, and the Northern Echo are reporting that the Magpies want to make Christian Eriksen, the Danish international, their marquee summer signing. He's obviously at Brentford at the moment. He's on a short-term deal after recovering from a nasty heart problem that he suffered during the Euros whilst playing for Denmark. Is that the sort of player that Newcastle United need, Marley? Is that the player that you'd welcome at St James's Park?
He's a quality player. Don't get me wrong, he's brilliant. But I'm not sure whether signing players the wrong side of 30 is the best sort of look for you. Like I think you can get younger players at this point, like of the mould of Bruno Guimaraes, for example. Like he's 24, 25. Got plenty of his best years ahead of him. Eriksen's quality, and he's free in the summer as well, which is, I think that's where the interest is coming from. You wouldn't go and rock up to Brentford and try and get him out of a 3 or 4 year contract right in the middle of it. So I think the fact that he's signed a 6 month deal in January is more the where the speculation's coming from. But we do need more creativity in midfield, to be fair, and he brings it. So in terms of rumours that make sense, a guy with creativity signing for a team that needs a bit of creativity ticks all the boxes, doesn't it? So I'm not surprised we're being linked with him. But to be honest, I've always thought he feels like a player who likes London a lot. Like, I think that was one of the big keys for him staying in the Premier League with Brentford. And I think, if anything, Spurs might fancy him back at the best. At the best case for him, but if not, I can see him staying at Brentford, to be honest. I think his relationship with Thomas Frank has been a big sort of pulling factor for him, and it'll help them fight in that sort of second season syndrome that a lot of teams struggle with next season when they kick off.
So from one former Tottenham player in Christian Eriksen to another in Gareth Bale, who obviously spent some time on loan at his former club last season. He's out of contract at Real Madrid in the summer. At the end of June, that deal expires in the Spanish capital, and reports claim that Tottenham and Cardiff City are favourites to sign him at the end of that deal. There's also retirement potentially on the cards as well, Joel. Where do you think Bale will end up, or where do you think he should end up? Cardiff, his home city, do you think he'll retire? Do you think he should retire, or do you think Spurs is the best option?
I'm really interested to see what his next steps are, because I personally I think he will retire after the World Cup. I just feel as though the Real Madrid ending has just really made his love for football just disappear, and towards the end it was pretty much him living for going away with Wales rather than actually playing for Madrid. So considering this will probably be the last time, or the last time he'll be in his kind of around, well, not his peak, but he'll still be able to dictate games. I mean, the next tournament he'll be 2 years old, and I don't think he'll be anywhere near the same player. So I think for him, he needs to just be I think he'll sign a 1 year contract with a team where he can just maintain his fitness. He can play at a pretty fast, quick level, just for the 3 months prior to actually going to Qatar, and obviously being able to have a pre-season as well, which, well, to be fair, it's not really made a massive difference, because even though he's not really played for Real Madrid, he scored some cracking goals for Wales on the way to getting into the final of their qualifying campaign. And obviously, let's not forget, they've not even qualified for it yet. So it'll be interesting to see what his plans are if they don't qualify for it, because I do think that if it ends up being the case that they lose that game against, I think, is it out of Ukraine and Scotland? I think if they lose that game, I think he does retire after that. Just because it seems as though Wales has become his club, his everyday passion, rather than actually going away to his country. So I think it's make or break. I think that game really does decide it. And, you know, we've seen top players who've retired kind of prematurely early. We saw Cantona retire at 30. I think Zinedine Zidane was only 33, 34 when he retired. I don't think there's any shame in it, even though the earning potential is still there. I think why not just retire on a pretty upward trajectory, to be honest. But I just see it as that game is make or break for him. And if he does go through, then he'll probably just sign a short-term contract somewhere. But yeah, I think that game decides his career, if I'm honest.
Final one we're going to discuss on today's show is Lucas Paqueta of Lyon, who's allegedly, that might change things for Arsenal and Newcastle, who are the two clubs supposedly eyeing him up as a potential new signing in the summer. With these two sides, Arsenal may yet finish in the top four. Newcastle United are beginning to build something. I know you're biased, Marley, but who's the more attractive proposal right now for someone of Lucas Paqueta's age and ability, 24 years old, playing for Lyon? Who would you pick if you were him? Obviously, you're going to say Newcastle, but why would that be?
I'd pick Newcastle. Shock. Because who wants to go and sign for a team where Piers Morgan's just constantly slagging him off on Twitter?
I'm sure, like, he's not really paying any attention to that.
Do you want Ant and Dec buzzing off you every week? Or do you want... do you want Piers Morgan going on about Arteta and how he ruined the team by selling Aubameyang? No, I don't know. Maybe it's not a 50-50 choice, but I see it as kind of closer than it looks on the surface, because there's no guarantees over any of them. No one's getting close to the top two, which is ultimately, you know, where everyone wants to be. So that's out of the question. And is it a case of Newcastle being ambitious and having enough to attract a player like that? You know, as we mentioned before, Lyon 10th in France. Can you, you know, is he going to stick around there for longer than he needs to? I'm not sure he'd ever have a better chance of leaving, especially if they go out tonight in the Europa League. So if you're looking at that and thinking, you know, he's going to go soon, he's going to look at his options. And Arsenal have got Odegaard in the number 10 position. He's, what is he, 23, 24? They've just spent massive money on him. You know, his route into the first team there isn't easy. And I think the biggest thing with this whole situation is he's best mates with Bruno Guimaraes, and they're always talking on social media to each other. They're always, you know, congratulations on the win, bro, and all this sort of stuff. And it's just set the Newcastle fans off, because we're like, brilliant, we're going to sign every Brazilian that Bruno knows, and we're gonna just have Bruno send a blanket text to every Brazilian in his phone book and say, come over to Newcastle, lads, they pay you loads, it's a bit cold, but we're actually quite a decent team. And there's more of a route into the team for him at Newcastle. There's not much competition in terms of where he plays. If we did play with the number 10, he'd be the only one in our squad, I would say, with maybe alongside Almiron, but he seems to be on his way out.
Well, so. It seems to make sense if you've been linked with Eriksen and now Paqueta that, you know, you are looking for a creative midfield player.
Yeah, exactly. And he's, you know, he's probably one of the best available. He's young. What did you say he was? 24? So, you know, he's young. He's also physical as well. He's about 6'1", 6'2". He's a big lad. So if you're looking sort of from a physical point of view, you'd think he'd be able to handle it in England. And the relationship, both personally and from a footballing side with Bruno Guimaraes, could be our little like ace card up the sleeve type of thing.
Well, that's the latest when it comes to transfer news from the Premier League. There'll be plenty more of that, I'm sure, in the next few weeks as we approach the end of the season. Arsenal, of course, interested in Lucas Paqueta of Lyon as well as Newcastle. The season is really starting to hot up now, isn't it? Some big games this weekend in both the league and the cup. We'll talk about them on The Dugout on Friday night. That's our Premier League preview show. Myself alongside Francis Benali and Trevor Stephen. It'll be interesting to get Trevor Stephen's opinions on his former club Everton. He won the title there at the 80s, but they are still at risk of relegation. If you want to hear all of that, then make sure you hit subscribe and that way you won't miss the episode there. Tomorrow it's Bank Holiday Friday, so there'll be no Football Social Daily from us, but we'll still have a podcast for you of slightly different persuasion. The guys from Rose Ed will be taking over our feed for one day only, so make sure you hit subscribe and that way you won't miss that one. But from us, have a great Easter weekend, whatever you're up to, and we'll see you the other side.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.